Russia massively shells Ukraine with various weapons, and Ukraine is in greater need for more ammunition. The Czech Republic is halfway finding the means for it. You're listening to the Explaining Ukraine podcast. Explaining Ukraine is a podcast by Ukraine World, an English language website about Ukraine. My name is Volodymyr Yermolenko. I'm a Ukrainian philosopher, journalist, and chief editor of Ukraine World. I am joined by my colleagues Anastasia Harasymchuk and Daria Sinhayevska, journalist and analyst at Ukraine World, to discuss key events in and around Ukraine for the last week. Ukraine World is brought to you by Internews Ukraine, one of the largest Ukrainian media NGOs. Before we start, let me remind you that you can support our work at patreon.com/ukraineworld. You can also support our volunteer trips to the front lines at PayPal, ukraine.resisting@gmail.com. You can find these links in the description of this episode.
Military support, namely more munitions and new types of weapons based on cutting-edge technology, such as long-range missiles or modern air defense systems, is what Ukraine needs to avoid disaster on the front lines. Despite the Ukrainian armed forces managed to hold their strategic positions, even though they faced some tactical losses, Russians keep attacking and the breakthrough is possible. Russian breakthrough is really possible, especially amid the lack of ammunitions on the Ukrainian side. And situation on the front lines, namely Russia's success or failure, will have direct consequences for European and global security. The processes unleashed on the front lines and their outcomes have a big geopolitical significance. The head of the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States of America, William Burns, recently said, "Without additional support in 2024, you'll see more of Avdiivka-like situations in Ukraine." Of course, first of all, he addressed his fellow Americans, and especially those politicians who failed to approve this vital aid package for Ukraine. But still, this situation, these words are also relevant for Europe as well. And European leaders are gradually getting to this understanding. They are gradually getting to the understanding that the European security is in the European hands, and it's a strategic mistake to rely on someone else in ensuring it. And Europeans, European leaders really better understand this reality, even though quite slowly, even though being trapped in a cumbersome decision-making process, and even though they are slightly hesitant.
And for what we can now see, there are like some shifts in this perception, although we understand that maybe it's not the priority of all European countries in its foreign policy, but at the same time, we see these three factors of ammunition supplies, of a ramping up military production and cooperation, and decisive rhetoric are increasing their power, and we see that from, you know, the strategy of playing by ears, we are getting closer to, you know, getting all ducks in a row. And although we understand there are like strategic calculations that Europe was not ready for the war to knock at their door, but at the same time, it's getting all it can. And we see this pattern from different countries, even of non-European Union origin.
Indeed, and I'd like to dwell on a bit on each of these factors. And first, let's talk about the ammunition supplies. The ammunition is of critical importance for the Ukrainian army. And the amount of ammunition is actually a decisive factor on the battlefield, since the shortage of them prevents Ukraine from taking decisive actions on the battlefield. And this shortage puts the Ukrainian army into these defensive positions. Moreover, as I've already mentioned in the very beginning, the lack of ammunition, the lack of weapons create these risks of the breakthrough of the front line by the Russian forces. And the shortage of ammunition is really felt, and the numbers speak volumes about that. Russia is capable of producing 3 million rounds per year, while Europe produces only 1.2 million rounds. And Russia produces 10,000 rounds per day, while Ukraine is capable of producing only 2,000. And in this war, artillery is one of the key factors, is one of the key weapons and change makers on the battlefield. Not only drones and modern technology, but artillery as well. And here we also can remember the failure of Europe to supply the necessary amount of ammunition to Ukraine, despite the promises to do so. And on this backdrop, the Czech Republic launched an initiative to purchase the ammunition for Ukraine outside of Europe in third states. And the Czech Republic found 800,000 rounds in third states, 500,000 of which are 155 millimeter calibers, and 300,000 are 122 millimeter calibers. This initiative needed money, and about 20 states supported this initiative of the Czech Republic and joined this initiative. And the good news is that the last week, the final, the initiative has become fully financed, and the final tranche was made by Norway. So Norway allocated $153 million to purchase the ammunition for Ukraine. That is why these ammunitions will be sent to Ukraine in a short period of time, maybe the next weeks. So we are waiting for this critically important cargo being sent to Ukraine. And among these states that joined this initiative, there are the Netherlands, who allocated 250 million euro, Belgium, which allocated 200 million euro for this initiative. There are also Germany, Luxembourg, France, Latvia, and many others. Also, Lithuania gave a certain amount of ammunition. They transferred it to Ukraine. Aside from the round supply, the European partners of Ukraine are thinking how to strengthen Ukrainian defense capabilities by providing other types of weaponry. And for example, after the meeting in Paris, France and Ukraine are having more active dialogue in the sphere of weapon supplies. And France promised to give Ukraine important drones and also Aster missiles. Very heated debates are going on around the Taurus missiles transferred to Ukraine. Germany isn't willingful to give these important kind of missiles to Ukraine, and actually long-range missiles could be a game changer on the front lines. Amid this backdrop, Great Britain offered a scheme that would let Ukraine receive long-range missiles. So Great Britain offered the following mechanism. So Germany would transfer its Taurus missiles to Great Britain, while Great Britain would manage to provide Ukraine with a bigger amount of Storm Shadow missiles. So this possibility, this scheme is being discussed now, and that is how Ukraine might get these long-awaited long-range missiles. But weapons supplies is not the only way to strengthen Ukrainian defense and military capabilities. So Ukraine's partners, together with Ukraine, are thinking about strategic steps to to enhance defense capabilities, to strengthen defense capabilities of Ukraine. And here we talk about the second factor, the joint military cooperation, military defense cooperation. I will skip the previous agreements that Ukraine had with biggest European producers of weapons, and not only European, also with American and Turkish. I will just focus on the most recent news in this sphere. Again, the Czech Republic, understanding the importance of timely and sufficient supplies of ammunition to Ukraine and their decisive significance on the battlefield, offered the joint production of ammunition in Ukraine. So the company called Czechoslovak Group is ready to transfer its production to Ukraine, transfer the technology. And now the negotiations between this Czechoslovak group and some Ukrainian companies are ongoing. So it is highly probable, highly possible that the ammunition and also heavy vehicles by this company will be produced in Ukraine. Also, after the meeting of Ukrainian, informal meeting of the Ukrainian allies in France, and within this enhanced and active dialogue in the sphere of defense between Ukraine and France, three French companies are going to set up their production in Ukraine. And what is important here, the French Minister of Defense told that there is this European consensus to produce European weapons in Ukraine. So within this initiative, there was a news about the KNDS consortium. It's joint German and French consortium. So it might set up its facilities in Ukraine, and France is talking about the summer. So they want to launch this production by summer in Ukraine. And the last but not least, this rhetoric, more decisive rhetoric Dasha has mentioned, it is extremely important because it is one of the ways to show the enemy, show the aggressor that Europe is willing to protect itself, not just Ukraine, but to protect itself and its values. And even though we are talking only about rhetoric, we cannot speak about any real actions on deployment of NATO troops on the Ukrainian territory, the rhetoric also matters here. And after Macron's statement about this hypothetical possibility of European troops presence on Ukrainian territory, the European leaders keep talking about this idea, keep talking about this possibility, while some leaders, as the German leader or the NATO General Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, denying this possibility and saying they are not going to send any troops to Ukraine. Some other leaders remain ambiguous while talking about this initiative. For example, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Poland, Radislav Sikorski, doesn't rule out that NATO troops' presence might become reality. And he told that he said that he appreciated the Macron's initiative because, and here is a very important message, because it's about Putin being afraid of Europe, not Europe being afraid of Putin. And he also said that the West should implement creatively defined and asymmetrical escalation. It is very well sums up the whole idea of these talks, of these disputes about the deployment of the Western troops in Ukraine. Because even the absence of consensus and those debates and difference in rhetoric of different leaders looks like very well thought tactics. of European leaders to create this ambiguity in heads of the Russian leadership. And in the same manner, in the same regard, the Czech president, Petr Pavel, also supported the idea of presence of NATO's troops on the Ukrainian territory. Again, we are not talking about the real plans, about we are talking about just hypothetic possibility. So Petr Pavel told that NATO states troops wouldn't violate international laws, and he emphasized that these troops are not necessarily going to be deployed on the battlefield. So it's not about combat deployment. It can be about also about assistance. So we see that the rhetoric is getting serious, and we see that the leader, European leaders, are creating this strategic ambiguity, and it means that the European leaders, that Europe is deeply in at play, and Europe, at least Europe, shows some decisive actions and is ready to confront Putin. And like, I see signs of deeper understanding that the European security depends on Europe itself to a large extent.
Speaking of lack of this desire for de-escalation from the Russian side that you mentioned, we can't omit the precedent that happened with Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis, who witnessed a Russian missile strike on the city, on the city of Odessa, during a meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky at a joint conference, and he called it an impressive experience. As far as they were in the port, and both him and Ukrainian leader were unable to get to safe place, and at that time Zelensky showed the importance of the port and what is being done to restore and strengthen the Ukrainian sea route, and the damage it suffered during the attacks. And to the very end, they heard the sound of sirens and explosions. They were very close, although they didn't have time to go to a protected place. Greek Prime Minister called it a very impressive experience, and Zelensky, in turn, commenting on the Russian attack, said there were dead and wounded, concluding that, you see who we are dealing with. They don't care where they hit. I know there were victims today. But I think this all episode may puzzle in a deliberate tactics of Russia. So, rather than taking a course of de-escalation, Russia is trying, to increase pressure on Ukraine and world community to, negotiate, oh, we will kill more people. And this is what happening, for example, during negotiations in Turkey, year before, and while Russian criminals barraged Mariupol, for example. And we know that Mstislav Chernov and with his team, Yevhen Malaletka, who survived through the besieged Mariupol and could tape some, recordings for the greater audience to witness these crimes, said that, I wished there were no film at all, and there were no, war to witness, rather than having this award. And just a few minutes ago, air alarms rang off in Kiev and other cities, peaceful Ukrainian cities. So I have nothing left to say, but I wish I had never had this topic to speak on.
That's true, Dasha, indeed. We are sitting in our offices, homes, and we are hearing air raid alerts every time, like regularly, several times per day. And that's a terrible reality when we think, should we go to the bomb shelter, or it is possible to stay in the office or at home and keep working. And like, if I was asked about such reality, about the possibility of such reality, like 5 years ago, I wouldn't believe it's possible. I wouldn't believe it's possible to react to these threats this way. But that's where we live and what we are living through, and that's a painful experience. But at the same time, like, we haven't chosen it. We haven't chosen it, and we would rather not talking about it. We would rather not experience it. But we have nothing left but support our state, root for our military, and like stand together, stand united as one in the face of the Russian threat. And continuing talking about this existential fight, I'd like to get to move on to the frontline news topic. And here, let's focus on several important directions on the front lines. But before that, like, the overall situation on the front lines remains quite tense, and Russia retained its initiative on the battlefield, even though Ukrainian armed forces managed to keep their positions, keep their strategic positions. Still, as I've already mentioned, the breakthrough is possible, and the getting the weapon supplies is extremely important for Ukraine not to lose the front line. So, talking about the directions, let's start from the southern parts. So, on the left bank of Kherson Oblast, Ukraine holds its positions, but the Russian troops are attempting to move forward. However, what is important to note here, the Russians use less aerial bombs, and it's the direct result of Ukraine's successful operations on downing the Russian jets. So now Ukrainian soldiers are less terrorized with aerial bombs. However, Russia intensified its aerial reconnaissance in this area, especially in the attempts of moving forward. Even though the attempts are being taken, the Russian troops have no success. Moving to Zaporizhia, to the Zaporizhia direction, the Russian troops still have this strategic aim to take the city of Zaporizhia itself. And in these attempts, their intermediary aim is to take the villages of Verbove and Robotine, which are important points on the way to Zaporizhia. And the operations on taking Verbove, Robotine, and some other villages and settlements that were liberated by the Ukrainian armed forces last year, they actually have this symbolic meaning, and the Russians wanted to retake these territories by the presidential elections. However, these attempts are failed. So Ukrainian armed forces managed to hold their defense lines in the region, and Russians, even though they try hard, they cannot move forward. And amid this desperate situation for them, the Russian troops use toxic substances more and more often, which is actually a violation of international law in terms of prohibition of use of the chemical weapons. And even though Russians are using these prohibited methods of waging war, the Ukrainian side still holds its positions. And there was a successful operation conducted by Ukrainian armed forces in this sector. Our army managed to destroy Russian electronic warfare system Palantin, which actually limits the capabilities of the Russians in this area. Talking about Avdiivka direction, which has been the hottest spot on the front line, and the news about Avdiivka's failure was a big one and was widely discussed. In this sector, there are still 50,000 Russian soldiers. So this amount is the same as when Russians took the city. However, the Russian side slowed down its offensive. Military experts and analysts were talking about the possibility of Russians going forward, moving forward fast and effectively. However, they are, like, Russian troops are stalled in three neighboring villages and they cannot move forward, even though this fast advancement was expected. And there are several factors that can explain the slowing down. First of all, the Russian soldiers are tired after this exhausting operation on taking Avdiivka. The second one is the landscape of this part of Donetsk region. It is very difficult for taking offensive actions. And the last but not least is that the Ukrainian side is holding defense lines firmly. So the fortifications are being built and all the necessary means to hold Russians back, the Russians back are taking. So the serious defense organized by Ukrainians are also a big hindrance for Russians to move forward. And talking about these fortifications and Ukrainian side going defensive, the biggest efforts on building these fortification lines are being taken in the north of Ukraine, in Sumy region and in the Zaporizhia region. So the construction process is actively ongoing, which really means that Ukraine went defensive. However, it is extremely important to hold the front line the way it is before Ukraine is able to move forward. And the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, in his interview for Rai One channel, told that the course of actions can be changed and should be changed. But for this end, Ukraine needs, first of all, long-range missiles. They are key game changer. And of course, Ukraine is not going to use them to attack Russia, but to liberate our territories. That is why Ukraine is waiting for these vital supplies so that the situation on the front line, on the front lines, can be changed.
So minus Balandin and minus Petrol Corvette Sergei Kotov, not only Ukrainian army succeeds in like ground work, but also on some operations conducted through marine sphere, and as a result of a strike by Magura maritime drones, the Sergei Kotov ship was damaged in the stern, starboard and port sides. And we know that the vessel was destroyed on the second attempt at the night of basically August 1st, back in 2023. Ukrainian naval drones had already attacked the Sergei Kotov, along with another ship of the same series, Vasil Bykov. But after being damaged, it was repaired. And some experts believe that this one, Sergei Kotov's ship, is like a preliminary element for preparation for the upcoming large-scale attack on the Crimean Bridge. What we can say is that this corvette was the newest patrol ship in Russia, launched in 2022. As we know from the words from Navy spokesman Dmytro Platonchuk, Russians have not entered the Black Sea for 6 days after the destruction of this ship. And if we are trying, you know, to understand how powerful is the Black Sea fleet of the Russian Federation for now, we can say that the total number of this fleet as of February 2022 was approximately 286 ships. But this list includes the cruiser Moskva and the rescue ship Kommuna, dated back to 1906, as well as garbage collectors. So in this case, numbers cannot speak volume, and basically we understand that it's hard to conduct warfare with the garbage collector. And we know that Cruiser Moskva was sank, and the best way to measure quality is to look at combat capability, or the tasks that the fleet is capable of performing. At the beginning of the war, the Black Sea Fleet had four tasks, which the experts identify as a naval blockade of the Ukrainian coast and ports. Second, it was to assist the ground forces in the coastal area by providing artillery fire, transports, and ensuring troops and cargo transportation. And these tasks can only be partially fulfilled, since they are only like masters of the Azov Sea, not other maritime locations. The third task is a seaborne assault. And as we spoke with Pavlo Lakichuk in our recent article, he said that in order to carry out such operation, the Russians were preparing back in 2021, conducting huge exercises at the Apuk training ground in Crimea, which involved not only ships from the Black Sea Fleet, but also from Northern Fleet, and the task was not completed because Ukraine was able to timely organize a strong coastal defense. And last but not least, the fourth task was to launch missile strikes deep into Ukrainian territory against some strategic targets using naval aircrafts and ships. And we know that Russia continues to employ this capability. And basically, this alarm that we have now is of a ballistic nature, like ballistic nature of danger. And accordingly, they are unable to perform two out of four tasks, but we are partially able to perform like one task, however, fully capable of performing the other. And from this perspective, you know, just to wrapping that all up, the Black Sea Fleet's capabilities have decreased by 60-65%. And this circles us back to the topic that we discussed earlier about the need of ammunition supplies, about need of ramping up this military production and establishing, I would say, a network of such capabilities, as far as it's hard to find the stocks of ammunition, as for now, as a lot of them are deployed. And that's the reason why sometimes diplomatic crosses with the military spheres. And if we talk about war state, then surely that does make sense. And this bridges us to the topic of Valery Zaluzhny as a new appointed diplomat in the United Kingdom.
Indeed, this breach between military and diplomatic spheres, as you've just mentioned, Dasha, is extremely important nowadays in Ukraine. And President Zelensky approved nomination of Valery Zaluzhny as an ambassador to Great Britain. And it was a breaking news. It was an unexpected news. And the media space is full of discussions about what this appointment might mean and what it might bring to both Ukraine and Great Britain. So all the experts agree that reputationally and diplomatically, this appointment looks very beneficial. Looking at the Zaluzhny's experience, military experience, no one knows Ukrainian needs in the military sphere better than him. And looking at his educational background, recently he got the degree in the international relations, which is also quite telling about this nomination. So he is a professionally and educationally good candidate for this position, even though he doesn't have this diplomatic experience. He has good personal contacts with his British counterparts in the military sphere, and his strategic genius, his way of thinking is actually what is needed in this position. Indeed, Great Britain is a key partner of Ukraine, especially in terms of military assistance and cooperation. And Zeluzhny's experience and background makes him a good match for the focus on military diplomacy, which is extremely important in relations, Ukrainian-British relations. So there are hopes for enhancing military support and military cooperation between both states. And Valery Zaluzhny knows very well what we actually need. So Great Britain is seen as a forward of the process of giving weaponry to Ukraine and launching important initiatives. And as the experience shows, some other states proceed with their decisions after Great Britain takes them. And as we see some coalitions like plane coalition and missile coalition, they don't work yet, and the impetus is needed to activate the work in these spheres. That is why there are also hopes on Ambassador Zaluzhny in this regard, and Ukrainian experts and analysts tell about it. So there is this hope for a new impetus for these initiatives. This appointment also has an effect, an impact on Ukrainian domestic policy. It is a very important step amid the recent scandals around the dismissal of Zaluzhny from the commander-in-chief position and amid the talks about conflict between the Zelensky and Zaluzhny and their political rivalry. So this appointment actually answers many of these questions. And the fact that Zaluzhny agreed to this position means that he doesn't have political ambitions, at least as of now. And actually, it is hardly possible to imagine him getting into this political rivalry at this stage when the war is ongoing. And would these ambitions be fulfilled? It's hardly possible. That is why it was difficult to talk about his political ambitions. But the acceptance of this offer, the fact that he agreed, actually indicates that as of now, Zaluzhny isn't looking at himself as a political figure. And if we talk about perspectives, this nomination and his experience as a diplomat in future might give him additional points if he decides to pursue political career in future. The second factor is that President Zelensky actually showed that Zaluzhny isn't his enemy or rival. He is in his team because he will be a part of the Ukrainian diplomatic machine. Talking about the United Kingdom, this nomination caused certain kind of excitement because the media, political experts, government representatives are talking about Zaluzhny as the ambassador of Ukraine to Great Britain, and they positively assess his figure. Even though the United Kingdom has this conservative tradition and in diplomacy, and they are more favorable towards career diplomats with long professional reputation, the figure of Zaluzhny doesn't cause any misunderstandings or negative assessments because it's a big figure for the United Kingdom as well. And the people there, including political experts, politicians, they consider Zaluzhny as a Ukrainian national hero. They admire his professionalism. And actually, the British media point at close ties between Zaluzhny and British military sector, let's say, with the defense ministry, with British army. And to sum up the opinions about Zaluzhny as an ambassador in the Great Britain, journalists and experts say that he might add energy and progress to bilateral relations between Ukraine and Great Britain.
And moreover, I recall the events of, and I bet you, Nastya, also know what I'm talking about, the events that were unfolded back in February when Zelensky decided to reboot military like system of military operation and organization unit, when he told that Zaluzhny will for sure be on their side, will help in strategic planning and will be part of this team. So, aspirations sometimes don't go along with people, but at the same time, some experts say that it was the right decision, given General Zaluzhny's vast experience, which will be used in strengthening military support for Ukraine, while others call the appointment an exile, given its political but not, you know, like professional aspect. To be honest, I do not share the second position, as far as we have already mentioned that former General Zaluzhny has both professional and educational expertise. But after the dismissal, Zaluzhny was placed at the disposal of the Minister of Defense, and the head of this ministry, Rustam Umerov, didn't offer a military position that would match the general's, you know, like level of expertise, just as President Zelensky hadn't made such an offer before. And under these circumstances, this gives, you know, like the food for media to say that Zaluzhny decided to, you know, try his hand from like military service to have the opportunity to do something else. And this something else happens to be a diplomatic rear. Detector media analyst Igor Prelyan says that he also sees a positive note in this appointment of Zaluzhny as an ambassador. However, the main risk is in this, you know, kind of political tensions, because for some people, it looks like a kind of reward for the former commander-in-chief for his 3-year service in office for deterring Russian invasion and preventing the Russians from seizing Kyiv in March 2022. And at the same time, we recall the story of Vadim Prestaiko, the previous ambassador to the UK, who was fired, and it was like personal decision of President Zelensky. So there is, you know, this very thin ground behind the appointments and dismissal of this or that profile. But at the same time, fingers crossed, we know that number one, General Zaluzhny really has this expertise. Number two, the United Kingdom is of great importance. Surely diplomatic work doesn't concern only with military issues. It's also about economy, tightening relations, bilateral. But at the same time, as we have already mentioned, Ukraine is in state of war, and surely military question goes number one. And we see this constant desire of the United Kingdom to help. We see costling weaponry amid the background of Germany's refusal to provide Ukraine with Taurus missiles. So it's important to have such a partner along these harsh times. And we have no doubt that this appointment, the profile of General Zaluzhny, will speak of himself a little bit later when he will have the chance to use it appropriately and at the fullest of his capabilities.
This was Explain Ukraine, a podcast in English about Ukraine by Ukraine World. My name is Volodymyr Yermolenko. I'm a chief editor of Ukraine World. This was a regular conversation between my colleagues Anastasia Herasimchuk and Daria Sinhaevska, journalist and analyst at Ukraine World. They discussed key events in and around Ukraine for the last week. Ukraine World is brought to you by Internews Ukraine, one of the largest Ukrainian media NGOs. You can support our work at patreon.com/ukraineworld. You can also support our volunteer trips to the front lines at paypal.ukraine.resisting@gmail.com. Stay with us and stand with Ukraine.